So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to Review Man.
Miz! Look at Miz!
Oh my God!
Randy Orton! And now it's the Miz! Can the Miz grab it? The Miz climbing the ladder!
In his first ever Miz! In the back ladder match!
Miz! Miz to the top of the ladder!
No, it won't come back! Oh, he's got it!
He's got the briefcase! Miz has got it! Miz has done it! Miz has done it!
I'm in shock!
His defining moment, his career breakthrough. The Miz is Raw's Mr. Money in the Bank.
You will never hear the end of this.
Check, 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 check.
1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2.
Hello. I'm John Pollock, and joining me is Wei Ting.
Hey, that's me.
That is you?
Yeah.
How are you feeling today?
Good. Really full of energy.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
I can't contain it.
How's your immune system?
It's perfect.
Oh, my goodness.
Perfect sign of health. Perfect bill of health. Healthy.
Energetic.
Fertile.
Fertile. Well, that's good.
You know?
Are you looking to plant any seeds?
Not at all.
No.
But if I...
You're not ready for any little tinglings that would be running around...
Not at all. Not until we get some alcoholics hanging out.
Yeah, won't that be something?
Mm-hmm.
Our spawn.
Yeah, that'll be weird. Then maybe...
Then we can finally do that review where we have a kid on.
Yeah, yeah. That is...
That's our dream review.
That is the whole reason to have children, isn't it?
It is, really. It's what can you gain out of it?
Yeah, put them on a podcast.
Absolutely. That would be the number one reason.
Yeah.
2010 way. This is not a long time ago.
No.
I got some dissent from people thinking we're not going back far enough to review things.
Oh, shit. Well, how far should we go back?
I don't know. A whole Olympic cycle to me is fair game.
Yeah. You know, I do feel like I this wasn't that long ago. Like, watching this show, the year 2010 now actually feels like it was... Like, when you say the year 2010, I'm thinking, well, it was 4 whole years ago. But then I watched this show... And I feel like, wow, okay, this actually isn't a long time ago.
You want to know how it sounds like a long time ago?
How?
2 weeks before this pay-per-view, we launched Review of Raw. And since that time, you and I have watched well over 200 episodes of Raw, with the majority of them being, well, I guess half of them being 3 hours in length.
Well, we started Review of Raw 4 years ago?
July of 2010. I looked it up.
Oh, God.
July the 6th. 2010.
Man, where did my life end up?
On our archives. Yeah, that's where the majority of your life has been spent.
That's really a document of what I've been doing for the past.
I would imagine, Wei, there's nobody close that you've spoken to more in the last 4 years than me. I'd love to know who's in second.
Well, if we're just talking about length of time, yeah, probably. Probably not. Probably not my parents. You know?
But quality of discussion, too, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We have some deep conversations sometimes.
I suppose, yeah. As deep as you can get before talking about wrestling, I suppose.
We don't talk about wrestling all the time, do we?
All right, are you trying to engage in some deep conversation?
No, I'm not at all. I'm just getting a sense of what you... what you get out of this.
Obviously, I've enjoyed it very much. Yeah, of course. I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't enjoy it.
I wasn't indicating you didn't. I think you do enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do feel like, though, I've seen some concern on the internet. People concerned about me. And I feel like some of that's valid. I do feel like maybe I'm approaching my limit. It's been a while since I've had a break. So maybe it's time I take a vacation or something.
Oh, are you making a bold announcement right now?
No, but
are you going home to find your voice?
I just definitely feel like I should probably take a vacation at some point.
No, that's a good idea. When are you going to take a vacation? This summer?
Probably in the summer.
Well, you're going away in July, but that's kind of work related.
Yeah. I'm going on two extended trips, like two week long trips in the summer. One will be with you.
Oh yeah.
So we'll probably continue our whatever we can down in Vegas.
We're going to be going there for 5 days next week. Actually, that's coming up soon.
We're going to the UFC covering what is it? They call it like World UFC Week,
International Fight Week.
Whatever that means.
It means we're going to get to see POD and Papa Roach live.
Yes, but we are there, of course, for UFC 175
and the Tough 19 finale.
The Tough that nobody's watching between Frankie Edgar and BJ Penn.
It's a horrible season.
Yeah.
But it's the least I followed a show. I've been PVRing it, and I kind of fast forward and then just watch the fights at the end, but the season's terrible.
Oh, there's no hook to – no draw at all. But I am very much looking forward to that fight itself.
With Penn and Edgar. Yeah. BJ Penn's cutting down to 145 for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Should be a lot of fun.
So we'll be in Las Vegas that whole week. But, we'll probably do some podcasts on the road, update you on all the festivities, and watch what wrestling that we can. We'll at least be able to catch Raw. I'm not – maybe Impact. I'm not sure.
I don't think we're gone. We're not down there for a Raw. So it's during the week. We're gone there from a Wednesday till a Monday.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And then
I don't think we'll probably catch Impact that week. That would be my guess.
Okay. But yeah, so then, some work-related things. But, I don't know. I'm looking for vacation ideas.
Okay.
Toss them out at me.
Well,
everybody.
Pose, where should Wei go
to
cleanse himself?
Yeah, where should I go?
Maybe... Actually, when do you go on your next trip? Because you're going – can we break this news of where you're going to be going later in the summer?
I'd rather not, because as much as it's confirmed, it's never 100% confirmed. So it's not even that.
So it's up in the air confirmed.
Yeah, I'd say like maybe like 85%.
Oh, I thought it was definite you were going.
It is, but you honestly never know, like especially with the pew. Yeah.
Plans can always change.
Yeah, card subject to change at all times.
So, did you enjoy our contest on Monday night?
I loved it. One of the best contests we've ever had.
We have some creative listeners. I was very worried about, would we get any submissions? Would this be too goofy for people? And they were excellent. Some of these promos were fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. I'm very impressed always. Anytime we throw some task out there for you guys to do. And you know what? T-shirt, I suppose. A T-shirt is a great prize, of course, but I feel like some of you guys, even if you don't win the T-shirt, you seem happy to do these contests and just, participate and get your voice heard out there. So as long as people have fun doing it.
Yeah, anytime someone can incorporate and bring that little bitch Pollock along, too.
Yeah.
That's a winning promo.
Or introducing glory hole matches.
Well, hey. People are trying to think outside of the box, or maybe inside the box in that regard.
Yeah. Interesting.
Some clever submissions we got on Monday night. If you want to go back and you want to hear us go through each of the promos and critique them, Review Raw is up on the site. That is one of our many, many shows we do. Do you think anyone ever stumbles across one of these podcasts? I figure with a podcast, you kind of got to know what you're getting yourself into.
I imagine sometimes people might just be on the iTunes front page, perhaps.
Sure.
Or, I don't know, maybe some link.
What podcasts are you listening to right now, non-wrestling?
Non-wrestling? Well, I don't listen to all that much. I mean, I still listen to a DVD ASA, which is a...
Is that still your favorite?
The number one health podcast.
That's in the health section?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. So they claim... But yeah, I'd say that's probably still my favorite show. To me, it's just like they're just – I think it's part of the same reason why some people like us talking, especially us bullshitting about stuff like this. It feels like you kind of really get to know the hosts and, you know. Yeah, I'm a big fan of that show. I listen to some jiu-jitsu podcasts.
Like what? I don't listen to any jiu-jitsu podcasts. I'm not even really familiar with ones out there.
There's one called the BJJ Brick Podcast, which is like two older gentlemen who talk about jiu-jitsu, but more from a fundamental standpoint. And some of my coaches have been on that show, so I listen to that. It's weird, though, because like they're not exactly, you know, here I am, like completely an unprofessional host critiquing other hosts, but like their interviewing styles are kind of awkward sometimes, where they'll ask a question and then like, here, John, I'm going to ask you a question and you respond right now.
Okay, I'm going to talk about the answer right now that you have proposed to me. So I'm going to elaborate further away on this non-question that you gave me. And I'm just going to keep talking.
That's great. Like, that's how they would respond.
So,
like,
that's really awkward.
Yeah, super awkward. But the content's great. So I like it. I like that. There's an open mat radio. It's not the same open mat as where John and I
do. That's some confusion in the marketplace.
Yeah, there may be some copyright infringement somewhere. But open mat radio is another good one. Yeah, that's about it, you know, non-wrestling wise. How about you?
Non-wrestling wise or non-MMA wise, my favorite sports podcast is actually Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan.
What is the hook?
I just really enjoy Bob McCowan. I like the regular rotation of hosts he has on. He talks, you know, I'm not a major sports guy, but I really do enjoy listening about sports for whatever reason. He has a policy where he just about never has athletes on because he thinks they're terrible interviews. And I have great respect for that because I think sometimes athlete interviews can be extremely dull, and I think we kind of get spoiled in wrestling and MMA where you have more outgoing personalities and people that actually will talk about things. Uh-huh. Not always the case, but you know, they'll have business reporters on, they'll have different you know, general managers. It's kind of my same fascination, I think, with wrestling, with MMA. I very much have a keen interest on the business side of things. Mm. So that's kind of how they approach it, and that's very easy to follow. So I like listening to that. They do a Friday roundtable, which I always make sure to listen to. I'm listening to a bit more of Joe Rogan of late, but again, it's only guests that are fighting related or Joey Diaz.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, well, his show is such a – I always wonder, you know, some people have come to me asking to start podcasts, and I always ask them what their intent is, you know, like what's your hook? And I had one friend who wants to start like just a show with his friend because he thinks he and his buddy are kind of funny. But then I asked him like what's your topic? And he's like, I don't know. We'll just kind of talk about a general topic like a Joe Rogan thing. And I – like my whole thinking is that – that's great if you're Joe Rogan because, you know, if you're famous, that itself is the hook. But if you're nobody, I don't think it would be very easy for people to just simply go to your podcast, you know, to hear two guys talk about nothing or anything.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of – I think the part of a podcast is very much more reliant on who it is as opposed to what they're talking about. I think what brings you back – I mean, I could listen to – 1,000 different sports podcasts, but I enjoy Bob McCowan. I want to hear his take on things, and that's what kind of draws you back. There's probably 10 million wrestling podcasts out there.
Yeah.
The amount of review podcasts that are now out.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Right. That's right. Yeah. There are a lot of them. So, I mean,
pressure is on way.
I know. Well, we weren't the first, obviously, either. So, but whatever. We'll continue to do ours. And the great thing is that you can choose to listen to any or all.
Or none.
Or none.
It's the great part about our world. Yeah. Are you going to be watching anything this week? And I mean anything.
No, I won't, actually.
You know what I watched last – I was home over the weekend, and I watched X-Men 1 and 2.
Oh, why is that?
Well – I'm not trying to plug the Fight Network, but they were on the Fight Network. Mm-hmm. We've got some movies.
Oh.
And I will tell you, I love that we have movies on. I like watching non-fighting on the Fight Network.
Yes.
X-Men 2 is a very good movie.
Yeah, I think it might still be my favorite of the X-Men movies. And I think there are going to be a lot of people that will say this latest one was better than that. But for me, like, that features, you know, my core group of favorite X-Men, including, yeah, you know, Nightcrawler, which I thought was awesome.
I really enjoyed watching them back-to-back because it's like I knew the characters, I knew the story, and it was like X-Men was kind of a lot of introduction, and it was a good movie, don't get me wrong, but X2 just seemed like everything was in place. We had a good story.
Mm-hmm.
It was all the characters were kind of established.
Yeah, they probably had a bit more money. Everything was a bit more refined. Storm's hair didn't look completely like a wig.
There was two hilarious moments in it. One was they're in the car, and I can't remember which guy it was. He was like, I hate uncomfortable silence. And he goes to turn the radio on, and Bye 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 starts playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a knock at the fact that, remember how Star Wars, they were going to try and have a Lance Bass cameo in it? Don't you recall this?
No, not at all.
Okay. Maybe I'm wrong. I'll find out on our message board this week.
So you thought that was like a diss?
I don't know. It was so awkward. There was no connection to the scene. It was just like an excuse to have an NSYNC song. And then the other was this.
Boy bands are just kind of funny. Have you ever seen like Spring Breakers? Have you seen that?
No.
There's like a great scene where James Franco, who plays this kind of thugged out rapper, he's like all rich, right? And he's got like grills and he's got all this shit. He's got nunchucks, you know, just all this shit in his room.
Yeah.
Like, anyway, it's great. And then all of a sudden, like, he's in the back, like, you know, with these girls. And then he's starting to, like, fool around on this grand piano. And you don't even expect him to know how to play a piano. But then he just kind of breaks out into this Britney Spears song, like, from her first album. And I don't even know what the song is, but it's just, like, the cheesiest song. And then this gangster rapper starts. It was great. Great scene.
Oh, well, that's great.
So what I mean, yeah, you just like throw in pop music anywhere.
And it works.
Yeah.
Well, the other scene was Wolverine looking for a beer. And they're like, oh, we don't have beer here at the school. We have some soda in the cupboard. So he pulls out a Dr. Pepper. And then what's the guy who?
Iceman.
Iceman. I should have known that. He just blows on it and then he drinks with the Dr. Pepper logo. And it's like it was so blatant that I thought it totally worked. I felt like having a Dr. Pepper watching this scene.
It was cool. Yeah, it was.
It was literally cool.
Exactly. It wasn't just like, here, drink this Tim Hortons. Like he had a reason, you know, to have it.
Yeah.
It's Iceman.
Yeah. Great stuff.
Okay. Well, if you're finding this podcast for the first time,
why?
Don't expect you have stuck around until this point.
Money in the Bank, 2010.
Uh-huh.
What did you think of this idea, Wei? Because up until this time, they had always put Money in the Bank at WrestleMania. It was a nice added attraction to WrestleMania. And then this year, they actually did two that year because they did have it part of WrestleMania the year Jack Swagger won and did not turn out so well for his longevity. And then they made it its own pay-per-view here with two separate matches when we still had the brand extension intact with Raw and SmackDown. Did you think that taking it away from WrestleMania was a positive?
At the time, I think I was personally against it because to me it was always a tradition of WrestleMania that I looked forward to every year. And taking it away, I thought, kind of decreased the appeal of WrestleMania slightly, especially for the undercard. But when you think about it from a business standpoint, it makes total sense, you know? Rather than have it be a part of a show that everybody's going to buy anyway, why not split it up and put it as its own special match, theme pay-per-view? Much like, you know, whatever, the Rumble, much like Survivor Series, it made sense, definitely better than a generic show like, I don't know, like Armageddon or Payback.
Yeah, and they've done a very good job with this gimmick. I mean, all these years later of largely protecting it, and the person who wins it, it's accepted as like a big deal that, okay, the company has plans for this person, and they mm-hmm. relatively cash it in, they get the title. You're meant to care, and it's not maybe at the level of a Royal Rumble, but I look forward to the Money in the Bank show every single year. It stands out as a pay-per-view unto its own.
In some ways, it has almost taken the place of what sort of the secondary titles used to be. In
the, I would say 100%. That briefcase means more than any of the other titles.
Yeah, whereas, you know, the IC titles used to be sort of a signifier of who was next to kind of get that top spot. This was almost an immediate, you know, indication of this guy being the next champion. So a lot of attention, a lot of, like, people benefit, obviously, just from that added attention. What do you think about the placement of this show on the calendar?
I think that you could move it, especially now where you have the unified title. I think this would work much better now in that February slot where you have your Royal Rumble winner. So in essence, you know your main event for WrestleMania and you don't need Elimination Chamber any longer to create a second title contender. I think this would work because February is a very tough month to draw. And I think this is a pay-per-view that has a hook for people. You can put the briefcase with somebody and you have that tease that they could cash it in at WrestleMania potentially. And I think it would work better today in February than it does in July.
Most of the time, though, you would expect them not to cash at WrestleMania, though, wouldn't you?
I think that that tease is good to have, though, that you could have someone come in and that is your big moment at the end of the show. I don't think you need to necessarily do it. I just think it works better there. That I just don't think Elimination Chamber really works now. That no. You only need one challenger for a title at WrestleMania, yeah. Not two.
I agree there, but I don't know if I necessarily put Money in the Bank in its place. Just because to me, I feel like the Money in the Bank is sort of like the beginning of a new season. You know what I mean? Like here's because it's the implications are that you can hold it for a whole year. I almost see it like the beginning, whereas February leading into WrestleMania is almost like you know. The climax of your season. I also wonder in terms of, you know, their quarters. This is obviously a show that probably does better than your average show. What else do they have in the second half or, you know, in the winter months to really kind of drive
that? Well, I still think the Elimination Chamber itself works as a stipulation that is still largely people get interested in. I always like the idea that they did where the winner of the King of the Ring would also get the title shot at SummerSlam that year. And I think that could be potentially used for your June event or your July event even, where you have the chamber and that's what's at stake, is getting the title shot on the number two, number three show of the year in SummerSlam.
I love that too. I don't know. I mean, I've always been a fan of the King of the Ring, and I just feel like the only thing that's probably been missing from it was, you know, stakes, like stakes for the winner, other than the trophy, which is nice, but or whatever. The crown.
Yeah, it was only a few times that they did the winner got the. They did it with Brock Lesnar, and I think if you had made that more of a point, like King of the Ring, it ultimately got shelved because it didn't do that well on pay per view. And I think if you had increased the stakes, I think that was it. Because really, it was a crown and a cape, and you know the idea was you were going to push this person and to varying levels of success.
Crown, maybe you could have like a contract in the crown. So it'd be like money in the crown.
It'd be like a Kinder Surprise maybe where you don't know what it's going to be. Could you have imagined if they went the campy way with Lesnar and he became King Lesnar with like a scepter? I just think they can't help themselves sometimes. Like they saw Sheamus, they're like, oh, this is a great opportunity.
Some guys it'll work, but some guys you're right, it won't. Which I think it would have worked.
I think
Sheamus.
Most it would. Yeah, there was Owen Hart. I think it worked. The King of Hearts.
Yeah.
Booker T.
Austin.
Revitalized him, his career.
Yeah. It wouldn't have worked. Like, even Regal, I think if they actually gave one to him, it would have kind of worked. You know, like, maybe not like a crown, but the throne works.
It's a very wacky gimmick that, you're right, very few it's going to work.
Man,
with.
Especially, come on, Game of Thrones is so popular now. Do you watch that?
No.
I don't either, but they can incorporate something from it.
It's the most popular show that so few people I know follow.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of people that follow it, but I don't happen to be one of them.
Are you watching any soccer?
Not that often, but I do kind of watch it occasionally. Yeah.
People are watching this. Like it's like record numbers.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. This U.S.-Portugal game, I think they were saying it was the most watched soccer game in U.S. history.
Wow. Okay.
Like 24 million people or something was the peak audience.
I wonder why. I wonder what the difference is this year.
I don't know. It's just apparently soccer. It's pretty popular.
Yeah.
That's our thesis.
Yep.
All right. Let's get into Money in the Bank. This was from Kansas City, Missouri, the Sprint Center. There was an opening video. about risking your future to achieve your dreams. Beautiful. And our announcers tonight, this was when we had the brand split, so we had the combined group of Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler, and Matt Stryker. And I hated when they put Jerry Lawler and Matt Stryker together. Usually, they would just bicker and fight throughout the pay-per-view. This show wasn't that bad, but God, I groaned when I saw these two were going to be paired to it with one another.
Right. Why do you think they happened to...
I think Lawler genuinely did not like him.
Right.
I mean, Matt Stryker was... He was like heavy wrestling nerd, like the guy who knows the trivia question to the most stupidest of questions. And we all know people like that. And it was, I think, just so irritating to Jerry Lawler. And these two would just get into like these – Lawler would just like insult him on the air. It was distracting.
I definitely noticed that. And I didn't even think about the reason why. But I definitely noticed sort of
Stryker is very easily dislikable with his – smug,
yeah, exactly.
Campy delivery.
Here's what like he comes across to me. I think he's actually very good, obviously.
He was, especially in ECW, very, very good color commentator.
But the thing is, he comes across like the guy who will just make up he'll be the contrarian friend who will just kind of explain a fact, but then I'll just correct you on it and tell you the truth, even though it might not be the truth. Like, I'll just bullshit you.
I hate those people.
Like, I'll just bullshit an answer. Like, you'd ask maybe a rhetorical question, like, you know, why are these things so hard to use? Whatever. That's a terrible example. But Stryker will just, like, come up with some bullshit answer and sound like he knows the answer to something that there really isn't an answer to, even though that's his job, but.
I used to have this friend, Dave, and he would just always take the opposite opinion of whatever we said. I could tell him it was Tuesday, and he would argue something about it.
Yeah.
And this guy drove me insane. And
it's not Tuesday everywhere, John. I mean, on the West Coast.
God damn it. I can't stand these people.
Me neither. I hate. It's like, just send them away.
Send them away. Well, that's what WWE did with Matt Stryker in the end. The match started off with Kofi Kingston, Dolph Ziggler, Christian, Cody Rhodes, Matt Hardy, Drew McIntyre, Kane, and Big Show in the SmackDown Money in the Bank ladder match. I don't know about you, Wei, but I looked at this, and it was guys that were either already established or failed projects when we look at them in hindsight. I mean, Kofi was still considered a... Maybe not a star of the future, but certainly it's like his career was ahead of him, whereas now I feel his best is behind him at this point. In terms of character development, he has just plateaued.
Yes.
Dolph Ziggler, as of right now, he's been given up on. Christian is pretty much almost retired at this point. Cody is right in that area where I would say he is like one more bad gimmick away from being in the same position Cody is, where he's just not – or sorry, where Kofi was. Yeah. Where he's just not going to realize that potential. Matt Hardy gone. Drew McIntyre failed. And then Kane and Big Show.
Who are always kind of at that level.
Yeah. They're not going to ever fall back nor move ahead from where they are right now.
Yeah. Well, that sounds about right for a mid-card. You know, a combination of guys who are kind of descending and guys that are ascending.
Yeah. You had four guys here who I think were all at one point in time maybe pegged for more and really didn't realize that in... Kofi, Ziggler, Cody, and Drew. The match, Kofi Kingston is the IC champion at this point, while Drew McIntyre is referred to as the chosen one.
Yeah.
Not factually correct.
He was chosen.
Dave would say, nope.
He was one of 10 chosen last week.
Cody immediately sets up a ladder as the others start fighting, quickly gets stopped by Kane and Big Show. We're not obviously going to go through everything in this match because there was so much to cover here. Some of the highlights included Kane started to clear the U.S. announce table and then stopped, realizing it wasn't the Spanish table, and then had to restart and go clear the Spanish table.
What a racist.
And Lawler, your favorite, the use of the word literally, said Kane has literally snapped. He literally has snapped. There are two Kanes now.
He's got a broken back, maybe.
I guess so. Kingston lays out Drew on the desk and climbs up a ladder and hits the boom drop through the table, to which either Cole or Stryker, I think it was Stryker. This is the irritating part. Kofi Kingston has just had his Money in the Bank moment. His moment.
Yes.
I hate that word in the WWE. His moment. He's going to have his moment.
What would you call it instead?
He just put a man through a desk. I don't need to brand this as a Money in the Bank moment. His brand has...
A snapshot. Highlight.
His highlight.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even call this a... Did you remember this?
It was probably the most significant thing he did in the match.
I'm saying watching this back, this isn't a moment you recall.
This is the first time I watched this.
Oh, you haven't seen this show before.
I don't think so.
Oh. Did you know who won it?
Yes. Oh. I did. Yeah.
It's fun to go back and watch. I went back and I watched a UFC event from 2001 over the weekend on Fight Pass. Mm-hmm. And the key fights I remembered. But then there were ones on the undercard where I couldn't even remember how the fight ends. And it was fun to watch an old show where you don't know the outcome.
Yeah. So you watched X-Men, which came out around that time. And then you watched UFC.
Movies like, yeah. I had quite the fun weekend on my goddamn couch.
Did you listen to Creed 2?
I actually have Higher on my phone in my shuffle.
Okay.
Cool. And now when I hear that song, I think of you singing it.
Oh, yes.
It prompted me to download it. I'm like, oh, yeah, Higher.
That was a great song.
You know what my drink of choice right now is? I found my grape vodka.
Mm-hmm.
Grape vodka and lemonade.
Wow.
That's need to come over sometime.
I'd love to try that. What do you call it?
I call it grape vodka and lemonade.
No, you got to brand it. It's got to be the John Pollock moment.
grape. Vodka and lemonade. Not really a playoff of each other in any sense.
Please.
How about the... What's pink and purple? Because it was pink lemonade and pink grape and vodka. Purple. What do you think of when you think of pink and purple?
I don't know. Raves. A raver.
How about who in did anyone in wrestling ever have those colors? Pink and purple?
Pink, but I don't know about pink and purple. Even that's a bit too much for a pro wrestler.
Yeah, you shy away from both together.
Wow. Yeah.
I don't know.
Men on a mission?
Yeah, they didn't have any pink.
Well, okay, you had lemonade in there.
Yeah.
Pink lemonade? Or yellow?
Pink lemonade. Pink lemonade. Geez. That's where the pink comes from.
Purple. This is a terrible show. We should really pause and try to think of a name and then re-record.
How about Brett Ziegler?
Why?
Wait, Dolph didn't have any purple. No, there was no purple. Those are just both pink.
This is the worst show we've ever done. Maybe I'll start my vacation right now.
Man on a Hitman. That's purple and pink.
I don't want to try this anymore. Sounds disgusting. Men on a Hitman? Oh, God.
It's a gang fight. Okay.
What's wrong with us? Why are we subjecting people to this?
How about this? We had Big Show knock Ziggler off the ladder and then chokeslammed him.
Yeah, you missed to start. They basically – one of the major stories here, I think one of the interesting parts was that, you know, anytime you have a ladder match and you have Kane and the Big Show in there, you're left to wonder, what are these big men going to do? How are they?
I think ladder matches are better when you have one of these guys in there.
Because they figured out how to use them. And to start off, they had Big Show, who as far as I know, has he done a ladder match before? Before this?
He may not have, one that comes off the top of my head.
So, but, you know, one of the big things with the Big Show was that how could he even climb this ladder? And to start off, they actually had him attempt to climb early in the match, and the rungs would actually break. They had
and they had someone climb earlier on the same rungs.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Yeah.
So I wonder if it was on purpose. But
it had to have been.
It must have been a gimmick thing, but it was great. It was fun to see him try to climb and then basically step through these rungs because of his weight. And so eventually, when the Big Show...
this was so good.
He went under the ring to take out a giant ladder.
Like, this thing was massive.
Like, I don't know what this would normally be used for. I don't know if they had to custom make this giant ladder. I don't know what they would need something like this for, but this was a massive massive ladder.
Stryker said it weighed 350 pounds.
Sure, whatever. It was so big that even the Big Show had a lot of difficulty getting it into the ring.
Oh, this was time standing still.
Yeah. It was like how awkward, you know, to have the whole arena and the whole world watching you try to fit this ladder.
This was worse than Sean Waltman trying to get that garbage pail into the ring last week.
That's
but
right.
Big Show's a veteran.
He figured it out eventually. He figured out some type of fulcrum thing, and Stryker was like, oh, he meant to do that all along. He's brilliant.
Yeah, I like this because they had Cody, Kofi, and Ziggler basically do all the more risky spots, while the others were kind of serving as either the base for them or just kind of background. Like Christian, very little in this match. Christian and Matt Hardy, who probably have a laundry list, especially Matt, of injuries from these matches, they didn't need to kill themselves in this match.
Although they still did, especially
they did
Christian.
Their one big spot, kind of climbing up and fighting together, but really were kind of more background to me than anything
sure.
in this match.
They also, as far as the big guys went, they would always try to keep them out of the ring as much as they can, and they would do that by having all the small guys kind of pile up on each individually and trying to get them out of the ring one at a time.
Show climbs up his reinforced ladder, and Kane tips it. And then they pile all these ladders onto Big Show on the floor. And Matt Stryker says it's ironic that Big Show's own ladder might defeat him. That's not ironic. That's not even a coincidence. That's just a... Is it
ironic, though? When
it's not even a fact because it hasn't even happened yet.
Okay.
It's a hypothetical.
No, isn't it ironic when something that you think is supposed to help you, that you brought to the match yourself, will ultimately end up defeating you?
No. I think it needs to be the exact opposite. Like, to me, the perfect definition of
you should call Jay.
Irony.
You should ask him this.
I've always heard the best example is that you get, I don't know. I don't want to break down irony.
Okay. It's a great visual in the ring, I will say, this giant ladder. And I wonder what they've done with it. It must be in that archive that they've kept, where they kept the SmackDown fist and all that stuff.
Yeah, have you ever seen that video series?
Yeah,
I enjoy it.
I love those. I wish they would.
They
do
save
it.
All of this shit.
Yeah.
Like, that's very smart on them when it came to tapes and all these props. I mean, you can make 1,000 episodes of
yeah,
that
Yeah, for
show.
Those of you who don't know what we're talking about, on the WWE.com site, this is not even part of the network. This is just like on their YouTube. And
yeah,
and
if you follow WWE Archivist, that's the guy who, yeah, he'll tweet out these videos. It's on the WWE's YouTube channel.
And, you know, it's with the WWE's great production. The first one they did was the Archivist goes to look at the ring from the first WrestleMania. It's still kept around somewhere. The second one was the SmackDown fist. And so they did a whole, like, five-minute little featurette on the SmackDown fist. It was great.
Did you ever see, I think it was the Survivor Series one year, where Big Show had his custom-made chair?
Yeah, that was cool, too.
I want to see a match where it's a giant table ladders and chairs match, where it's just got all his oversized weapons.
Listen, it would be fun for a second. It would be the worst match of all time, I think.
It might be Kane and Big Show.
Yeah.
Anyway, finish comes. Hardy and Christian climb on top of the ladder. They're fighting. Each shoves the other off. And then Drew McIntyre and Kane climb. Drew gets sent down. And I think most people were expecting Drew to get this big win after being the chosen one by Vince McMahon. But it ends with him being chokeslammed. And Kane is left on his own. And he grabs the briefcase. This went 26 minutes, 17 seconds. And I don't think anyone thought Kane was winning this match at the time. Not someone who needed it. It's usually the up-and-coming star, but instead they went with the established name here. But I thought a pretty good match.
I really enjoyed this match, especially because the Giants were utilized very effectively. I liked the big ladder in the middle. It actually provided a very stable base for the smaller guys to jump off of as well. And Kane, I thought was very unexpected too when I heard about the result. But he was, like, as far as like what I remember, he was going through some storyline with The Undertaker at the time.
Yeah, The Undertaker had been taken out by Nexus. I think that's how it was.
He was, wasn't he like buried or?
Yeah, he got buried. No, that was still to come. But anyway, Undertaker had been taken out and Kane was searching for the whoever perpetrated this. And I think it ultimately ended up being the Nexus, who would work with Kane to bury The Undertaker later that year in a Buried Alive match. And then they never – when Undertaker came back the following year, they just dropped it. And they never went – because they were going to do Taker, Wade Barrett at Mania the following year. And that's right. What this was all building to.
So they dropped that just like they'll probably drop the Shield thing with Taker.
I guess they will. We'll never
– solution to that.
Yeah, Taker just got beat up. And
he lets go.
You know, he's not a man for grudges.
Yeah, he's laid back.
He's the bigger man. Josh Matthews is in the back with WWE Champion Sheamus. And this was right after they had debuted the Nexus with that incredibly hot angle to introduce them where they destroyed the whole Raw set. And this pay-per-view, though, was going to be headlined by Sheamus and John Cena, who had both been attacked by Nexus in the lead-up to this. Said he came to help John Cena this past Monday on Raw. He thought he was untouchable until he stared at Nexus in the eyes, and they were like great white sharks. And he says how Nexus is a threat to everyone, and he chose a side, said he got no respect when he beat John Cena for the title last December or at Fatal 4-Way the prior month when he won the title back. He hates Cena for making fun of his accent and being pale, and the fans' opinions are worthless. This, to me, was a very shitty low point in Sheamus' run where he was presented as this big, effective heel when they first won the title. And this was the infamous angle where he ran in fear from Nexus as a heel. And to me, Sheamus never recovered from this title run. And it was just I've never seen him as a top guy since.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I completely forgot about that, but you're right, that whole angle.
They showed it in this video feature, him running, and just like the Phoebe from Friends run as well.
I just thought the character itself, him as a babyface, I just didn't find him very entertaining at all. I thought the promo was kind of bland. It came across very over-rehearsed and pre-written, lacked any type of spontaneous energy, and I thought it went too long. So, you know, I don't think he's doing very well as a babyface right now, but if this is the alternative, it's not that great either. I just feel like this is a guy who needs a complete makeover, not only in look, but in character as well.
Next up was Divas title match. Alicia Fox defending the title against Eve Torres. All I remember about Alicia Fox when she held the Divas title was that promo she did on Raw once where it was live and she said, "I am the undefined Divas champion," and fucked up the word undisputed. It was great. That's all I can tell you about this title run.
It's a immortalizing title belt trivia.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's probably why I remember it. Fox mounts her from a collar and elbow tie up. Do you think this would be effective way as a setup to the mount, a collar and elbow?
Mounts her from a collar and elbow tie up.
Like if you had someone with your...
We don't really do collar and elbow. I guess we do grips in jiu-jitsu. But
yeah, I guess it would be very hard, I think, to end in a mount position from there.
Yeah.
But well, Alicia Fox did it here against a Gracie jiu-jitsu disciple.
That's right. I guess she like almost jumped guard and then like mounted right from the guard jump.
I think that's the next wave where they should go with the women, where they have to do like simulated jiu-jitsu matches.
Okay, why?
Just for my own amusement and entertainment.
Maybe.
Like, why not? Like, this version of the women is, like, there's
that's
really...
That's not a bad idea because, yeah, jiu-jitsu is created for smaller men and women. And maybe, you know, some of the power stuff, the women can't make look as good as, you know... But that's not true either. You have, like, great wrestlers like, you know, Natalia who can do any style. But I don't know. Maybe for like, the model types. Maybe it'd be...
Get them all in jiu-jitsu classes.
Sure.
That should be the next wave of female wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Lawler says he likes a diva with a high IQ and a low neckline. Very classy. Crowd was very quiet for this match. Fox runs Eve into the apron from the floor back first, starts working over the back. The storyline here was that Fox is proving it was not a fluke that she won the title the prior month at Fatal 4-Way. A concept pay-per-view that was built around Fatal 4-Way matches.
Yeah, see, like, that's...
There was a reason there was only one of them.
I don't see how that had any appeal. Like, I don't remember anybody ever looking forward to a Fatal 4-Way for the Fatal 4-Way itself. To me, a Fatal 4-Way is almost something you put on a free TV show, not necessarily something you headline a pay-per-view with.
I never, like, see any excitement about multi-person matches. I think we've seen so many of them.
I do so sometimes if I know the workers are excellent. And like, because, so, you know, you think about, like, you know, in Japan or, like, even in Mexico, some of the great multi-man matches that have occurred, trios matches, whatever.
Yeah. I guess it – because obviously we're talking about the Money in the Bank as well, which is technically a multi-person match but very, very different.
The difference is there's something big at stake and, yeah, and, you know, it's a gimmick match with the ladder, the Fatal 4-Way. Is that even around still?
What, Fatal?
That pay-per-view?
No, they just did the one back in 2010 and ditched it. Yeah. Eve goes for a vertical suplex, but her back gives out, and then there is a kick to the face of Fox and a standing moonsault for a two. Eve then goes for a somersault off the turnbuckle, where Fox gets her knees up, further injuring the back, and then Fox hits an axe kick and gets the win, 5:54. So they tried to tell the story with the back. Crowd was pretty uninterested.
Crowd was very dead, and it's... You know, these girls did try, you know.
Tough spot, too, when you're following a 30-minute ladder match.
Yeah, like, it's quite apparent that often these girls are just basically put out there as sort of the buffer in between all the exceptions.
That's when we had two women's matches on the show, I think, for that reason.
And nobody, you know, you kind of have to feel bad for some of these girls because girls have to, I mean, like, girls in, like, any almost, in many major... men-dominated sports, like, they almost have to work harder, especially in pro wrestling. They have to work harder to get people's interest because people are going to be extra hard on them anyway. And unfortunately, they just didn't do anything that great or that special enough to get people to care here.
We showed a video package of Kane searching for the man that attacked The Undertaker. And there were highlights of SmackDown where Kane goes after Jack Swagger and his father, Jimmy Golden, the former Bunkhouse Buck. This was just the death of Jack Swagger, was his very short world title run and then just a joke after that. It was a shitty title run, and I don't think he ever recovered from this. Anyway, it involved Jack Swagger attacking the ankle of Rey Mysterio, who won the world title the prior month at the Fatal 4-Way show. And where does this go? Swagger watches his dad take a choke slam from Kane, and they explain that this was a flaw in Swagger's character.
Why did he not save him? He couldn't because he didn't want to jeopardize his...
Well, he was scared of Kane, yeah. He didn't want to get injured. Somehow, Swagger was the bad guy in this, and not Kane, who was attacking an elderly man.
Well, Swagger was the guy who didn't protect his dad.
Would you run in if your dad was about to be chokeslammed?
If Kane was like a real...
Like a real monster. Villain? Yeah. What would you do?
I definitely would do something.
I would hope for the sake of Mr. Ting that you would at least try.
Yeah, I wouldn't just run in. I'd probably run in with like a knife.
Police?
Knife or something.
Oh, jeez.
Like some type of sharp object.
Yeah. What if Kane knew Krav Maga and knew how to stop you with a knife?
Okay.
Could maybe use it on you. That could be dangerous.
Then I'll just maybe a giant ladder. I'll pull out the giant ladder from under the ring.
The Usos come out with Tamina. This had to be the most generic music they could possibly find. And that says a lot in WWE.
You missed the segment with Swagger on the phone.
Oh, fuck. No, I didn't miss it.
Mom, calm down. Let me explain this to you. Mom, you're not listening to me, all right? Just stop, all right? How's Dad doing? No, that doesn't matter, all right? We've already been through that. Quit being so hysterical. Mom, shut up. All right. None of this was my fault, okay? Dad's always living vicariously through me. When I won all those championships, all those accolades as a kid, he always acted like he won them. No, it wasn't my idea. It was his idea to come down to the ring last Friday night. As far as I'm concerned, Dad got what he deserved. Why? He was trying to steal my spotlight. Yes, I felt bad. Of course, he's my father. I wanted to help him, but I couldn't risk that monster Ken going berserk on me and not being able to compete tonight. Yes, of course. Look, Dad would have done the same thing to me, all right? So you can just tell him that he can once again bask in my glory, because I'm going to snap Rey Mysterio's ankle tonight, and I'm going to win back the World Heavyweight Championship.
This might have been the worst acting I've seen in long time.
One of the fakest phone conversations I've ever heard. Everything he says here is just full of exposition. You know, just like, yeah, Mom, I know I'm about to go and have a World Championship match
with the Demon Kane.
And then you just sprinkle, like, yeah, in between every sentence once in a while.
This was horrible. Just the end of Jack Swagger was maybe on this show.
You know, but they did, like, I felt, you know, by doing all that stuff with his dad, they were trying very hard to get him some type of, you know, heel heat.
I think they couldn't make their mind up about whether they thought this guy was a legitimate, you know, potential star or just a goof.
Yeah, I think...
I think they like to go back and forth, and the result is what we got with Jack Swagger, who means nothing right now, and I don't think he can ever be rehabbed.
It's almost like they kind of, you know, saw him as sort of the... They used a Kurt Angle template with him a little bit, but he's just very different from that. I don't think he had sort of the comedic timing, nor was he as intimidating as Kurt Angle when he needed to be.
Put Kurt Angle in this segment on the phone. I'm sure he could have done it very well.
It would have been funnier, but it still wouldn't have been right, you know?
No, I don't think it would have worked for his character at all. But, yeah. I mean, Swagger, he was not good at this comedy. Yeah. And he also wasn't at a level of Kurt Angle in the ring either. And I think he just was someone that just wasn't handled properly and probably came around at the wrong era. Because I think this guy, at a different point in time, could have been really effective. And when they first introduced him on ECW, I was very high on this guy. I thought, here's a, you know, an amateur wrestler, good look to him. Shouldn't have been talking.
Yeah, the lisp is kind
of... This is a kiss of death for him.
Yeah, lisp of death.
The Hart Dynasty, with Natalya defending the unified tag titles against the Usos, Jimmy and Jay, who were simply distinguished by one wearing trunks and one wearing tights. Easy.
Yeah, they seem to have made a bigger effort at this point to differentiate themselves. They also had one. Yes, one had long tights, the other had shorts, but one also had slightly differing bad dreadlocked hair. You know, they both had dreadlocks. Like, I'm talking really bad dreadlocks, like Korn dreadlocks. You know, like the guitarist from Korn. And one guy had him slightly different from the other.
Stryker gives some background on who was trained at the dungeon, listing people that, you know, really didn't get too much training at the dungeon. The Usos, they said, were made and created to dominate. That was the mission of Rikishi's sperm.
Maybe they're made in, like, a lab.
The Usos.
Yeah.
Lawler says how D.H. Smith is missing a mean streak. That's what's holding him back while he's defending a championship here. Jay hits a running splash to Smith's head. It looked like Smith broke his neck here as they showed the replay of it, whereas he had like whiplash from his neck snapping back. They hit this move that I know you are a fan of, the Ali-Oos.
Ali-Oos.
Where they pressed one of the Tyson Kidd up into the air, and he falls into a Samoan drop by the other. The Ali-Oos.
The Ali-Oos. Why don't they use that name anymore?
I don't know. Maybe even they thought it was too over the top. Ali-Oos. I can't believe the Usos have been around for 4 years.
Yeah. When did they actually debut?
I think it would have been right around in 2010, maybe early 2010.
Yeah.
Jimmy hits a splash off the top, but Kidd gets his knees up. Smith comes in, applies the sharpshooter, but Tamina gets on the apron. Natalya takes her down, hits a scoop slam, and they apply the sharpshooter to Jimmy as Kidd takes out Jay, and they get the win. 5 minutes, 53 seconds.
I thought a decent match. Crowd, honestly, though, didn't seem to latch on for much.
They didn't know who these four guys really were. They did nothing with these four in terms of character at all during this time.
Yeah, and like the, you know, I thought the Hearts were over to an extent, but you can really tell their whole identity was only based on their association with Bret.
That was it. It didn't go past that.
The Sharpshooter was really the only thing that got a big reaction. Beyond that, they just came across as quite generic and weren't given much identity. But still, they were
which can go for the Usos as well. Their gimmick was they were Rikishi's kids and they're twins.
But at least they were more over than the Usos, who really had nothing.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't even very effective heels. They're doing way better these days.
Oh, that entrance to me when they incorporated that was a real turning point for them, because God, watching them just walk out to this music with nothing, they didn't acknowledge the crowd. Yeah. It was,
to be quite honest with you, I still feel like they're kind of dropping the ball with the Usos. They could go way further right now with them, especially with their association with John Cena, especially with this guy on Total Divas. I think this guy's like a star on Total Divas, you know, and they barely give these two any type of mic time.
I would have loved to have seen, you know, they're going to do Harper and Rowan against the Usos at the pay-per-view. I would have liked for them to have thrown in maybe Jimmy and Harper into the second Money in the Bank ladder match. And it at least gives you an opportunity. They don't have to win it, mm-hmm. but it's an opportunity to at least break them out.
Yeah.
As I think those two in particular within the teams, I think have potential. But I think with the Usos, the twin thing is always going to limit them to always being in a team, and I don't know if they're ever going to separate them.
Well, I mean, let's look at Mark and Jay Briscoe, for instance. You know, like, are they twins?
No.
Okay, they're not twins, but they look very similar, and they almost have very similar personality. They look quite similar, but yet, like, I think Ring of Honor has done a great job of splitting those two apart and making them both distinct.
Yeah, they always come back together, but they have gone their separate ways as well, and I think you could do that. I think you should do that. I think Luke Harper is someone that he's improved greatly, and even Rowan. I mean, he was probably not ready a year ago when he got called up, and I think he's been more than passable in his role as well. Our theme song for Money in the Bank 2010 was Money by I Fight Dragons.
Okay.
You love I Fight Dragons, don't you?
I went to see them at North by Northeast.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're huge on iTunes.
Yeah.
Our first title match, Rey Mysterio defending the world title against Jack Swagger. He won it in the Fatal 4-Way the prior month. I think they switched all the titles at Fatal 4-Way. The Divas title, both main titles.
No, so you had to watch it.
Oh, it was a must-see. Watch it next year. Must-see event. Stryker explains that Ray has a grade 2 tear in his ankle as he limps to the ring. And as they're doing the introductions, Ray is holding a rosary.
Oh, yeah?
He's praying.
Interesting.
Praying that this guy doesn't fuck him up or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
The beginning of the match sees Ray defending his ankle and hits a low kick, gets caught with a quebrada attempt. Swagger misses a running spear in the corner, and then Mysterio comes back with a seated senton on the floor, and he at least sells the ankle.
It's kind of crazy, you know, like kind of knowing the state of Rey Mysterio's body today, to see him even 4 years ago doing a lot of things like this, like a seated senton, basically diving from the top rope, landing to the floor on those knees.
Yeah, I mean, today, I mean, look at all the springboards he was doing in this match. Can't even do a springboard anymore, he says. He's got climb now. His knee won't extend at that point. Mm. But from there, Swagger presses him up, and then they kind of sloppily fell to the mat here and kind of botched whatever they were going for. Swagger misses a Swagger bomb, gets kicked in the head by Ray. Ray comes back with a split leg and moonsault, gets a two count, and then Swagger with a gut wrench power bomb, but Ray gets his foot on the rope, sends Swagger shoulder first into the post, and then Swagger recovers, goes for a power slam off the second turnbuckle, but it gets reversed into a tornado DDT. He hits the 619. Ray goes for the West Coast pop, but gets caught, and then Swagger applies the ankle lock. Ray gets to the rope, and then hits a Swagger bomb, hits a second one, and then Ray's left boot comes off, and Ray
loosens his boot.
He loosens it to alleviate the pressure on the ankle.
And also because he knew Swagger was going to go for the ankle lock. This was the Eddie Guerrero spot with Kurt Angle.
Yeah, and it was funny because the announcers were trying to explain this, and Stryker was explaining how the fact that actually taking the boot off is worse for you.
It was one of those, exactly what I was talking about earlier, how like he is.
And Stryker is technically right, but the story of the match is what he was completely contradicting.
Yeah, like he just wanted to
fucking know it all.
Argue, yeah, he just wanted to.
Can't let his ego just let something pass.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was just, you know, get your story across straight. Like, anyway, the left boot comes off, and then Ray goes for a Hurricane Rana and rolls up Swagger at 10:45, and Swagger attacked him after the match, and that would lead to a Kane running in for the save, attacking Swagger and fighting up the ramp. But the match as its own, at least for Ray's first match, pretty much based around the ankle.
Yeah, I loved this match. I thought it was great. I mean, I thought Ray did a fantastic job selling, delivering offense with that only with a healthy leg, appearing hurt anytime he uses or lands on the injured one. And I thought Swagger, mainly due to the size discrepancy, really came across like a serious threat, almost like a monster here. Everything that he delivered seemed to have like high impact because he was so much bigger than Ray. I thought the match was very good. And again, a privilege to be able to see Rey Mysterio, even at this point in his career, pull off everything that he was able to with his body.
So Kane chases Swagger to the back, but then Kane returns with his pyro going off, and he has the briefcase, and they announce he is cashing it in. So the bell rings. Lawler says Rey just finished what may have been, quote, the match of his career.
Yeah.
All Super J Cups, cruiserweight matches, Eddie feud. Nope.
Well,
nope.
What are you,
Swagger.
You're the commentator or whatever.
I'm surprised Matt Stryker didn't pop in.
Correct.
Actually. So the match begins, and Kane just hits a choke slam and tombstone and pins Ray in 53 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
And this was the first time a guy's ever cashed in the same night he has won.
It made sense on this night because you have two briefcases at the same time for the first time. And I suppose maybe part of the worry is that with two briefcases, maybe it'll kind of take the luster off of both guys. So why not immediately have somebody cash in? It made for a big moment on the show for sure. And I just really enjoyed this entire segment, both the match and also the surprise title change.
And the direction they were going to go was Kane Taker fighting for the title. So maybe not on paper the most aesthetically pleasing feud for the title. But that was the direction they were going in. And yes, Kane got his moment. His Money in the Bank moment.
Yeah.
We went to the back where Edge and Chris Jericho are together. And they were both going to be in the Raw Money in the Bank match. Edge talks about how he is desperate. And he's won the Money in the Bank before and teases he will cash it in if he wins tonight. And Jericho says the same thing and how he created this match, which is true. He was the one who pitched this idea years back when they introduced it and explains how he has never won this match, unlike Edge, and therefore he is more desperate. And these are two great performers, two great talkers. I felt this was very rigid, and it felt like, I don't know, these two very much had this like, it was almost like they had memorized this script and they just went back and forth. And I just felt it. It felt very awkward for these two.
Maybe perhaps it was due to the fact that they're both heels, you know, and maybe both would shine a bit more if they were both against baby faces.
We had our second Divas match, which actually preceded the Money in the Bank match, so wasn't used as the buffer. It was Kelly coming out, and I didn't know who this woman was that came out next to her. I thought there was some storyline where there was a clone of Kelly, and it was Taryn Terrell, who was just there to assist Kelly and root her on.
Her friend.
Yeah, the star of the Knockouts division.
Yes.
Layla was accompanied by Michelle McCool, and both held the Divas. Did they hold the women's title, I think they had?
This was the women's championship.
Yeah, and I think they did a deal where they broke it in half each held a title.
So dumb.
So Layla against Kelly. And they had been bullying Kelly on TV, calling her Smelly Kelly. Was she smelly in person?
Because
Braden would know better.
Yeah, I didn't notice any type of smell. I have a bad sense of smell anyway, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Can you smell?
I can, but I don't have the best sense of smell.
Oh.
I really don't.
The more you know.
Yeah.
It's one less. Does that mean
I think that's actually a benefit in many cases. You know what I mean?
Like, not being able to smell?
Yeah. I mean, imagine if you had...
You probably smell more bad things than good things,
exactly.
Typically.
I mean, everything...
Now, I guess you wouldn't know.
Well, everything I smell is, like, neutral. But if I had, like, a good sense of smell, I think I'd be bothered everywhere I go. You know? No. I don't know what smells are coming out of this booth.
Yeah, I might be just horrific. You wouldn't have any idea.
I've never had any complaints. It smells fine.
We saw Kelly hit Layla with a Thez press, and she then goes to kick Layla. I think she clean missed her in this kick.
Man, jeez. Like, I feel like Kelly, what, the last time she was on TV, she wasn't good. No, she wasn't at all. But she was really bad here 4 years ago. Man, worse, like, I'd say, like, Kelly here, worse than any of the women I've seen on any of the big promotions this year.
I remember there was one time on a pay-per-view where Beth Phoenix went to superplex her off the top.
Yeah.
And the referee was there in the corner. And Kelly's, like, just yelling, oh, my God, 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 oh, my God. She took the,
like,
superplex.
Clearly a girl that did not belong in a pro wrestling ring. I'm sorry. I'm sure she's worked very hard at it. But at least at this point, clearly not ready.
I hate to be negative on her because you really got the feeling like she was trying very hard.
Sure,
but this,
yes,
this is a complicated art form.
Yeah.
And I think just the idea that any person can come in and everyone becomes excellent at it, that's false.
Yeah.
This is a very tough industry to get very good at. And I think that is only that's only heightened by the fact that many people are not good at it.
Yeah.
And some people's bodies are not built for it. And Kelly would be one of them. And I'm kind of glad she has stepped away because this woman could be physically wrecked by that. She was called up at like 18, 19 years of age.
But the thing is, it doesn't necessarily mean that she can't have a career in pro wrestling. I mean, geez, like how long have women existed in pro wrestling just kind of on the sidelines, maybe as managers, maybe as valets, maybe as mouthpieces or whatever. And I think she could have perfectly served a role there. I don't know how great her promo was, but she would, you know, I'm sure she... They made money off of her in other ways.
She went and hit a handspring back elbow that Stryker identified as a Muda handspring.
a nerd.
These two people occupy the same industry.
Yeah.
Cole and Lawler start making fun of Matt Stryker for calling the moves. What a nerd. As Layla trips up Kelly and gets her caught in the ring skirt, Layla then baseball slides Kelly and she falls onto McCool on the floor. And McCool then gets shoved off the barricade by Kelly after she's mocking Kelly. Kelly then hits the K2, which is pretty much a shitty famouser. That's what the hold is, the move. And McCool grabs the leg as Kelly and Taryn Terrell knock her down to the floor. Kelly goes for a sunset flip that Layla doesn't roll through on and grabs the leg at 3:58 as Stryker proclaims, Wembley Stadium! God, was this guy irritating by this point. We know. Okay. You know wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
God, this is like that person who it's just like, look how much shit I know.
Yeah,
I know so much and I just want to tell you all of it. God, man, subtlety.
Yeah. Have you ever watched wrestling with like a fan like that? Or like an MMA match with like a fan?
Sure, I have.
You have.
I'm sure you have too.
I would feel bad for that fan because they probably don't know that John, the person they're watching with and saying all these things to, probably knows like even 10 times more things than whatever that person knows because they follow the underground or whatever. But man, yeah, he definitely came across like that.
It was too much at this point. And then he did this god-awful British accent at the end, congratulating Layla.
Should be it.
Flip up over the top. No.
Beautiful.
Both legs
Wembley
here.
Wembley Stadium. Yeah. My little English muffin. Congratulations. Yeah, here you go, sweetie pumpkin pie. And here you go, little English muffin. You're welcome, pumpkin.
Now I know why I watch SmackDown with the sound muted.
Richard?
And it ends with Lawler just saying, well, that's why we watch SmackDown on mute. But Stryker was too much, man. He was just way too much at this point.
He had some very good points, though, to him. Like, he, you know, I love that he was able
he
to
He came from a
matches.
Good place, but yeah. It was like, man, if you don't understand how irritating you come across, it was like, I remember this so clearly that it's like I didn't even want to watch these pay-per-views with the sound on when it was Lawler and Stryker. They were just so much of a detriment to me enjoying this.
The problem is, like, I think the two of them are kind of extremes. You have Lawler, who doesn't call any matches, doesn't, you know, will not make any references like that even when they're relevant. And you have Stryker, who maybe does it too much. You know, ideally you'd have somebody right in between.
Yeah, and I just felt it was like you had one guy who I think – cared so much about what the internet would say about your performance, and another guy who couldn't give two fucks about what anyone says.
Dude's never logged on to anything.
They show highlights of the SmackDown match, the ladder match, and that takes us to the Raw Money in the Bank ladder match. Quite the lineup here of varying degrees of stars. Randy Orton, Edge, Chris Jericho, The Miz, Mark Henry, Ted DiBiase, John Morrison, and Evan Bourne.
Yeah.
This one was way more in focus of guys that, I mean, John Morrison, Evan Bourne, and even Ted DiBiase, who they were high on at this point, would never realize that.
Yeah, this was when Ted DiBiase had the million-dollar belt. He had
and Maurice.
Yeah. That, the most natural looking couple in pro wrestling history.
These two,
they had such little chemistry, man.
Maybe the least I've ever seen of a male and female pairing in company history.
Yeah.
It was ice cold.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it had to have been kind of weird for Ted DiBiase, who was walking down with Maurice, who was dating The Miz at this time. Mm-hmm. And it was just, it was so awkward. I mean, Ted was married, and I think he just really had an issue with this. And it was just so uncomfortable to watch these two.
Mm-hmm. What, do you think they ever considered pairing Maurice with The Miz?
They teased it on TV a few times, but never really went that way.
Right, right.
And I guess The Miz didn't really need it at this point. This was when, I mean, The Miz had come over to Raw. He had he was a very good talker at this point. Yep. And this was certainly the high point for Miz was here, and this match essentially leading into his title run.
A very good IC title run right before this. And this was when really The Miz was on the rise. And I mean, geez, set to main event WrestleMania that year.
So The Miz was the U.S. champion at this point.
U.S. championship as well.
They're all the same. Edge puts the ladder into the ring as the match starts, and then he just leaves as if, Let these animals just fight amongst themselves, and he'll just pick up the scraps. Bourne is climbing, and Edge tries to stop him, and Bourne hits a Hurricane Rana off the ladder. Miz had this very much aggression to his character. Like, there was no goofiness to him. He had, I don't know, more of just a mean streak to him just in the match, and I thought it was very noticeable in this. I can't get over the changes of The Miz.
But I feel like he still has that, you know? Like, in-ring, on his
maybe
promos.
He tries. I bought it here as I don't now.
Yeah. I don't know what it is, but because he's essentially been playing the same character, but I feel like he was just a lot more fresh back then. Anyway, I don't know. I'll have to think
I just think the character hasn't evolved, and it's really – it's devolved, is that a word?
Sure.
It's just, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Devolution.
Yeah.
He didn't adapt, and thus he's perished.
Yeah.
What else do we have here? Pretty much Mark Henry was like your big base in this particular match. There was a point where DiBiase gets knocked on the floor, and Maurice is checking on him, and then she goes into the ring and starts climbing the ladder. And then Morrison takes her off the ladder, and this leads to him being distracted, and DiBiase runs up from behind to climb up and gets stopped. And so that was one distraction spot. Morrison glides over this one ladder into the main one in the middle, but then Edge ties him up inside of the ladder and starts dropping it down on his chest.
Like a guillotine.
Yeah, and then Edge and them shove the ladder off with Morrison tied up in between this ladder.
That looked like the worst part of this that whole thing. Not the guillotine thing, but just like Edge casually tossing the ladder off with Morrison still trapped inside it. Crashing. It was crazy.
Edge and Orton toss Evan Bourne over the top, who gets caught by Mark Henry and takes the World's Strongest Slam. Jericho hits a code breaker to Henry, and then Edge with a spear, pretty much taking Mark Henry out of the match. Then DiBiase, he got on this ladder that was horizontal as Orton and Edge just then slid it away over the top rope to the floor, flattening out DiBiase. There's an RKO to Edge, then another one to Morrison. Then Evan hits the airborne to Orton.
right off of an RKO. So imagine Randy RKOs some dude and lands flat right near a corner, and within like the moment he touches down the floor, Evan jumps off with the shooting star press. It looked great.
They mentioned during this match of this spot they did on Raw that I still remember to this day, and they wasted it on an episode of Raw where Evan Bourne did his shooting star press and landed into an RKO.
Yeah.
And it was a thing of beauty. Yeah. How they timed it.
Totally. Like, Orton, like, say whatever you want about him. I think his timing is just excellent, especially with that move, that finish.
I would have saved it for this way more than the Raw going into this show.
You still remember it.
Though, I do, but I don't know how many others do. I mean, it was one of the most spectacular spots on Raw I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I just think you do it on a pay-per-view, it just, you remember it that much more.
It was definitely
a moment.
Yeah.
It was Evan Bourne's moment. Edge and Jericho fight on the ladder. Orton RKOs Jericho off the ladder, knocks Edge off onto this upside-down ladder that was right next to it. The crowd was very hot for the idea Randy Orton was going to win this match. They were all ready for it. And Orton is climbing. They're in tight on Orton. And then Miz tips the ladder and just climbs up and grabs it. 20 minutes, 27 seconds. And I think there was also some surprise Miz won this as well. And would build up to his title cash-in later that November.
Mm-hmm. A very good match, I thought. But I did enjoy the first one a bit more simply because of the kind of the story it told between with the big men and the little guys. But I thought this was very good, too. The Miz winning, to me, seemed like the best option of all the people there. He was sort of the guy like on the cusp of main event stardom at the time.
And even looking in hindsight here, I mean, Evan Bourne would become very injury prone, and just I would never have seen them putting it on him. Morrison was just just never got to that certain level. But
yeah.
I mean, he was another option at this point too, and the rest really didn't need it at all. And I kind of like the comparison. You had one guy who you did the immediate cash in, and the other was more of the long term build and
for
tease.
Sure. And I don't necessarily see Kane benefiting much from a year long holding of the briefcase as much as somebody like the Miz would.
Yeah, probably not. So Miz cut a promo afterwards about how the people are living in his moment and he will be a future champion.
He cut good promos at the time. He really did. And I'm trying to like pinpoint exactly the reason why he's so unlikable now. Because it's sort of the same delivery, same style, but for some reason, like he had a lot more momentum behind him.
His promos had this air of like real emotion behind them, where he would cut these promos about the fact that he was literally once tossed out of the SmackDown locker room. He was not welcomed at all, and now I'm the champion. And there was something to get behind that. This guy that was. He was so shitty when he first started, and he made so many improvements and became the champion, and it wasn't like this reaction of, oh, Christ, they put the title on Miz. It was something fresh, and that title run, I thought he really got kind of just thrown away when The Rock came back and all the focus became Rock and Cena that year for Mania, and after he lost the title, it was just he spun out. Yeah.
He was a failed experiment.
He was.
I kind of had that stigma attached.
But that feud with Lawler that they did going into WrestleMania, I thought that was really strong, and I think he – I wouldn't say the title – it was ultimately a failure, but when they first put it on him, I mean, he was deserving of it to me.
Hmm.
Then we got a video for the main event involving Nexus attacking both Sheamus and Cena. And this, of course, would lead into a match pitting Nexus against... No, that's not it. Nexus wasn't involved in this at all. It was a cage match with Sheamus and Cena.
They should have been, with the storyline. They're certainly the focus and the bigger heels than Sheamus.
The Nexus was the complete focus of this main event story, and they had nothing to do with the match. And they actually used the term with John Cena... he was being attacked by Nexus, and Sheamus made the save on the go-home Raw. And they say, they're friends tonight, but they'll be enemies on Sunday.
Take my money.
Consider me not in the least bit interested. Steel cage match, which to me only told me that this steel cage, don't even take it seriously, and they would tell you that later. Sheamus defending against Cena. Stryker notes that there have only been two WWE title changes in this city, with the most famous being The Undertaker in 1999. Yes, at Over the Edge 1999 in Kansas City. Most famous incident on that night show was The Undertaker winning the title.
Yeah. Yeesh.
Like, why even bring up that stat?
I wonder.
And I wonder, Matt Stryker, of all the people, knows exactly what happened that night.
Yeah.
It wasn't like Lawler just looking at his title history here, noting it.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, he mentioned it, not something that I would, you know, I wouldn't put two and two together to understand. But If you asked a thousand fans
what happened at Over the Edge 1999, not one of them is listing that title.
He didn't mention Over the Edge, did he? He didn't mention it by name. But
He did not say it. He said, in this city, The Undertaker won it in 1999.
Okay.
Whatever.
Point taken. Point
the most famous title change in Kansas City.
I would love a commentary team with you and Matt Stryker. That would be, to me, would be a dream. He would bring up all the shit. He would try to correct it.
That'd be way too much snark for anyone to handle. It would be on mute in a second.
Oh, my God.
This match. Sheamus had the advantage very early on. He ran Cena into the cage. I find with John Cena, his best matches are ones where he gets to incorporate, you know, different weapons. You can have those big elaborate brawls, but when you enclose this guy into a structure, this was a real boring match.
Yeah.
Crowd was out of it. I was out of it. It was long. They didn't really get into his comeback. He hit all of his trademark spots. And I don't think anyone really believed they were going to see a finish until Nexus somehow got involved. Mm-hmm. And they were right here. Mm-hmm. And they didn't react until Nexus finally came out late in the match, where Michael Tarver had bolt cutters. And the referee takes away the bolt cutters. They threaten Jack Doan for the key. He throws the key into the crowd. Cena then sends Sheamus into the referee in the match. He applies the STF. Sheamus is tapping out. Then Cena goes to climb to exit the cage, and Justin Gabriel fights him on top. Justin Gabriel gets flipped into the ring, taking a big bump, and then they stop Cena from exiting the cage. Then they try to stop Sheamus, but he makes it to the floor before Cena can, and then he runs away through the crowd, your valiant heel champion. 23 minutes this match went. I thought this ended the show on a real lackluster note. I just didn't enjoy Cena and Sheamus here. I think this really limited Cena's strengths. And, like, just one of many examples of just shitting on the steel cage stipulation. I mean, that's why people don't get excited about cage matches, because they are trained to know that it's not a match where you're going to get a definitive blow-off to a feud. It was more or less just an obstacle for Nexus to get through. And I didn't really get any solid finish to this. Mm-hmm. I thought this was a real low point of the show.
Yeah, the match itself, very basic, generic wrestling match. And the finish to end the pay-per-view, you know, on a show where you had some very big moments, you know. I almost would have wanted to end it with the Kane match, the Kane win. I feel like that would have been a bigger pop to close the show. But
well, you had to do the title change, right? So that would have been difficult. You would have had to end with Ray and Swagger then.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Like, oh, they're, I see what you mean.
They're not big enough stars. This is the sort of the main angle. So I understood. But the ending of this kind of put the show on just a more kind of muted note to end. I thought the finish was a little overbooked and just a little ridiculous, unfortunately.
After the match, Cena attacked Darren Young, sent him into the cage, and then he got into the three-point stance and tackled Michael Tarver, or clotheslined him, and then threw the steel steps at him, takes Michael Tarver's armband, and leaves.
Uh-oh.
Ooh, tune into Raw tomorrow night.
Yes.
So...
yes.
Pretty bad main event, I thought. But overall, I thought this was a pretty good WWE pay-per-view. I mean, both ladder matches were very good. Ray Swagger was a good match as well. Mm-hmm. This was a better than typical WWE pay-per-view in 2010, I thought.
Yeah, I thought so too. And, you know, it wasn't a show filled with a bunch of meaningless filler. You had a couple of women's matches in there, but they weren't even that bad. They were kept so short, you know, especially that Kelly match, obviously the least impressive match on the show, but even that was only like 3 minutes. The rest, like these two ladder matches were fantastic, I thought, and the Ray Swagger match was great too. So overall, good show. Maybe, 8 out of 10.
I'm going to go 7.5 out of 10.
All right.
All right, so that was Money in the Bank 2010. We're going to go over now to the message board. Why don't you kick us off, Way?
Well, I will do that as soon as I find this.
Okay.
Right. I found it.
My internet is slow.
Derek from Denton, Texas. Hey, John and Wei. Hope your day is going pretty good so far.
It is. Thank you.
Well, I was hoping that this show would be pretty good, but I was disappointed at the end. For me, there was only one match I enjoyed, and that was the Raw Money in the Bank ladder match to me. It felt more like a true Money in the Bank ladder match with lots of memorable spots, more athletic stars, and more interesting winner than the SmackDown Money in the Bank. To me, everything else on the show ranged from all right to I just didn't care. The WWE title match kind of just dragged to me, and the World Heavyweight title match wasn't great either because Rey was still doing his springboards and whatnot, even though his ankle was messed up. I thought the Nexus story was actually pretty good at the time, along with being interested in The Miz as the Raw Money in the Bank winner. Also, I'm really hoping for a Sheamus heel turn soon because I feel he is much better heel than face.
All right. We go to Patrick from Dublin, Ireland. Really enjoyable show, in my opinion. I was so excited during this period of WWE television as the Nexus angle had me glued to the screen every week. I remember just waiting frantically for the Cena-Shamo match to end just to see the Nexus come out and do their thing. That, in a sentence, sums up your main event. I couldn't wait for the main event to end so Nexus could run in. Which they did. Both ladder matches were great, as they usually are. I know he's gone downhill the past 2+ years, but The Miz was so strong at this time in 2010. Was thrilled when he got the briefcase. Pity his title run was as shitty as it was, but an 8 out of 10 show.
We go to our next piece of feedback. Sup, John and Wei.
Sup.
I remember when Miz won the briefcase, I thought that he was going to be the guy that's finally going to fail at cashing in Money in the Bank. We all know how that turned out. I wasn't a fan of the decision at the time, but I also realized that the company had to take a chance at making new stars. I just only wished that they had put all their faith in him and actually gave him a chance to succeed when he won the championship. Decent show, in my opinion, with nothing really blowing me away like next year's. Also wondering, did you guys hear about the new Power Rangers reboot movie that Lionsgate plans on releasing sometime in the near future? I think I heard something about that. Like a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers reboot.
Oh, that's cool. I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah.
Are you high on a Power Rangers movie?
No. I love the Power Rangers, but to me, like, they should... The appeal was, like, how kind of campy it all was. And the moment I think you attach, like, big Hollywood production to it, it would take a lot of the charm away.
Yeah. You know? Dave writes in from Australia. My first time seeing this show is 2010 was the last couple of years where I was not following wrestling, so I was unfamiliar with the storylines. But as a standalone wrestling show, I enjoyed it. The SmackDown ladder match itself, apart from the inclusion of Big Show. That's the whole sentence. his high spots of bringing the giant ladder in the ring and being buried under the ladders were simple yet effective. Seeing Matt Hardy was a surprise, as I wasn't aware he was still with the company at this point. Yeah, he was actually let go very shortly after this. Raw ladder match was the lesser of the two for me, but still good nonetheless. Although a minor annoyance with this and many ladder matches is how everyone struggles to climb the ladder and has a hard time unhooking the object. But at the end, The Miz just ran up and then unhooked the briefcase with one hand in seconds. The WWE title match was your standard cage match, but I enjoyed the aggressiveness John Cena showed at the end. And I thought Sheamus made a decent heel. Nexus seemed to have a shield element to them as well. How did it all go wrong? A good show that seemed overlooked because of the following year's addition.
Michael from England. First, guys, this is weird and spooky. Last week I thought, I might watch a show and feedback sometime now. I have the WWE Network. Hours later, I decided I'd watch a Money in the Bank match. I opted for 2010. Watched the first match and decided I'd finish the pay-per-view later. An hour later, I went on the Law Pro boards, and lo and behold, I see it has been announced that you will be reviewing Money in the Bank 2010. Therefore, I feel I owe it to provide this review. I thought the flashbacks of the SmackDown segments with Kane and Swagger were a sign Kane could cash in on Swagger, so I was a little surprised when Ray won the match. I'm ashamed to say I didn't know the Usos had been around since 2010. I was also surprised to see two Divas matches on the card, and although the first was athletically better, the second was more entertaining. The ladders matches were great and definitely the strongest parts of the pay-per-view.
And we go on over to Aram from Denmark. 2010, the year of The Miz and The Nexus. Which of them were the biggest letdown? I miss the guys from Nexus, especially Michael Tarver, who I remember in some skits walking around and drinking coffee. Looking back at this pay-per-view, I mostly remember this awful Kane title run that got us Taker versus Kane Part 42, and eventually the Edge-Kane feud. And whatever happened to John Morrison? They should bring him back to face Batista. 5 skip Sheffields out of 10. Morrison just left when his contract was up. He's been doing a lot of he was trying to launch this like personal fitness deal. He's doing a lot of comedy stuff, like improv comedy, and he'll do the occasional convention or show, but not as much on the wrestling front.
Hmm. Finally, Lewis from Dallas. This was a pretty interesting show because you got to see so many popular stars back when they weren't so popular, like the Usos and Tamina, who I'd argue is...
I don't know if it's a... It might be a lateral move in popularity at this point.
Dolph Ziggler, dashing Stardusty Cody Rhodes. Man, have things changed with all these people. They all look so plain and boring during this show. The SmackDown Money in the Bank wasn't too bad, as it was an entertaining spot fest, and that boom drop through the announce table was awesome.
It was a moment.
That stuff with the Big Show was amusing, and I like that he got buried in ladders to bring him down. Kane wouldn't be my first choice to win, but he's okay. And he says, the World Heavyweight Championship match wasn't that special either, as I didn't find Swagger all that interesting, and the references to Eddie Guerrero just remind me of that exploitation storyline after his passing. That's it.
Well, what a downer to end our feedback on. Thanks very much for that. All right. Well, that was Money in the Bank 2010. We hope you got through this review with us. Next week, I told Way, pick anything. Pick anything you want to watch next week, Way, and what have you chosen out of the vast library of wrestling content out there?
I have chosen a request that I actually have – we've been receiving for a few – you know, quite often since it came out, and that is the Insane Fight Club documentary that the BBC produced recently, and – I don't even know the full story behind it. You'd probably be able to explain it a little better than me.
Yeah, well, it's just based around this promotion that I'd be curious if some of our listeners have even attended some of their shows overseas. Building to what was their biggest show in their history, running a bigger building than usual. They were bringing Colt Cabana for the show, and they had these cameras following them around. And it's kind of just this kind of behind-the-scenes look at promoting an independent wrestling show. It's about an hour in length, and if you go on YouTube and just search Insane Fight Club BBC, it's right up there. So very easy to watch, not a significantly lengthy documentary either, so hopefully you can watch it, leave some feedback, and we'll chat about it next week.
Mm-hmm.
Always fun to do a documentary review out there.
I'm grateful for them.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right, that will wrap up another edition of Review Away as we put to bed Money in the Bank 2010. What a chapter in history.
It was fun to talk about.
Yeah, it was a good show. Do you enjoy good shows versus shitty shows?
Yes. Definitely. I'll say, like, you know, I think I just need to, never mind.
Tell us, what were you about to say?
I just have to kind of have the energy to watch the shows, you know, for me to, good or bad. But obviously I prefer good shows, but I think our listeners prefer
bad shows. That's a real conundrum.
Yeah.
We've got to constantly be fighting. All right. Well, go check out Insane Fight Club. And you can also download all our shows from this week. The Law from Sunday night. We've got the full interview with Kurt Hawkins up on the website. 25 minutes with Brian Myers. Find out which WWE personality is not a huge, didn't grow up a huge wrestling fan and is not that great on WWE Countdown. Big question answered on that interview.
I think I know.
And Review a Raw from Monday night. Go listen to all those great promos that got sent in. And we're going to start thinking about another contest soon. I like the contest. I'm a big fan of the contest. It was way better than Raw on Monday night.
I thought Raw was pretty good.
Yeah?
I thought there were some very great moments.
There were also some shitty moments as well.
No. Well, you can't have too many moments.
Hey, are you watching Money in the Bank this weekend? This is one I can't really – I always can try and tell how good a pay-per-view is going to do based on what I think you're going to – are you going to be interested or not?
I am.
You are going to watch it?
I am.
Oh, yeah. My.
I mean, I kind of made my mind up, you know, quite early on. I think I would have watched it even without this title stipulation. But you know, because of the title stipulation and because of the second ladder match, there are a lot of stakes attached to this show. And the matches themselves should be good. So that's enough of a hook for me.
Jason Agnew is missing the Law Sunday night because he has he's got tickets to go see Michael Bublé.
Oh, my God.
And will not be able to see it. He is planning to order Money in the Bank just so he can see it because he's very much looking forward to this show. Yeah. So It's a fun pay-per-view.
I wonder if there's any other person on that Sunday night going through that same situation. I'm missing this show to see Michael Bublé.
He's a unique wrestling follower.
Yeah, he is.
All right. So we're going to go out with some Michael Bublé as we wrap up this show. This is what Jason Agnew will be listening while we're listening to Men Fall Off Ladders on Sunday night. And go on over to liveaudiowrestling.com, subscribe on iTunes. All our stuff is free. It's a horrible model.
Yeah. We're basically going to starve to death.
That's what we do. So
we do recommend, if you do want to support us, lawradio.proboards. Sorry.
That doesn't give anything to us.
No, you could support us with your feedback. That's not always nice to hear from you guys, too. But prowrestlingtees.com/law.
Yes.
Where you can get some of our law shirts, like the one we gave out this past weekend for our contest. But if you don't want to go through all that effort, just simply go and help us out. Buy a shirt. Hot Ronda shirt coming up.
It's flying off the digital rack.
The digital rack, yes. In support of, not necessarily any famous Ronda. It could be any Ronda. It's kind of hot.
Yeah, it could be
Ronda. Let me think.
Ronda Shear, who is the celebrity at WrestleMania 10.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Who else? Ronda. Do we know any other Rondas? Ronda.
I know some Rons.
Okay.
Hot Ron. Duh.
God. All right. We've gone on for
a bit. We've hit our max. Way's giving me the wrap-up sign, so we're going to get out of here. It's done talking to me. And we will chat with you later this week with some Impact. Yes.
Here, cue the Michael Bublé.
Another summer day has come and gone away from Paris and Rome, but I wanna go home. Maybe surrounded by a million people, I still feel all alone. Just wanna go home. Oh, I miss you. I've been keeping all the letters that I wrote to you, each one a line or two. I'm fine, baby, how are you? Well, I would send them, but I know that it's just not enough. My words were cold and flat, and you deserve more. Another aeroplane, another sunny place. I'm lucky, I know, but I wanna go home. I got to go home. Let me go home. I'm just too far from where you are. I wanna come home.